Right, today I hope we can complete the prologue to the book of Proverbs, which is the first seven verses, and then we should get to the first statement of a proverb, which is in verses 8 through 19, and then I'd like to give you an outline of what we'll be doing next Sunday in verses 20 through verse 33. We're doing the prologue in some detail. It takes up the first seven verses of Proverbs, and as you recall, it breaks into three parts. First of all, we've got the title of the book, and that's found in 1:1, which says, The Proverbs of Solomon, and again, it would be a good idea to know the Hebrew word involved, which is mashal, M-A-S-H-A-L, and a mashal basically is a statement of truth. The reason I give you that word is because it can be a long, now when I say long, I don't mean chapters. For example, the first one, the book of Proverbs, is verses 8 through 19. And I'm calling that relative to Proverbs a long proverb. It's a long or very brief statement of fact or statement of truth. And in that statement of truth, as we said last week, it can be a general statement of truth. It can be about a historical situation, something that has happened, or an event, or something of that sort. Or, many times, a proverb is simply an object lesson. We had, in the book of Deuteronomy, the fact that Israel was disobedient to God, and God said, I'm going to make you a proverb. And the meaning of that is, I'm going to make you an object lesson, something from which all people can learn. Then, following the title, we started into the purpose. And the purpose of Proverbs is stated in verses 2 through 6. And you can pick up on that purpose by the two expressions. There are five of them. Verse 2, to know. Second line of verse 2, to discern. Verse 3, to receive. Verse 4, to give. Verse 5, to understand. And all of those are expressions of purpose of the book. And remember, the purpose is set up by verse 2 of giving the dual purpose of what it's about. And it is about, written for the purpose of, giving us ability to develop moral skill to A, to develop mental skill to B. So those two purposes, the first line is moral skill, which says to know wisdom, and as we said last week, the word instruction does not have to do with the intellect or the mind, it has to do with the moral aspect of man. So to know wisdom and moral instruction, that is the purpose of developing moral skill. And then second, to discern the sayings of understanding. That is an appeal to the mind or development of mental skill. And we illustrated the way we'll see many, many times in the wisdom literature of Proverbs, the way the book will do. It will start out, and you think of these two purposes as inch-high type. Then in the next verses, verses 3 through 6, you'll have half-inch type. And then, in the rest of the book, you'll have quarter-inch type. So it's a headline, then a subheadline, and then the body of text. And the way it works is to state real quickly what the major ideas are. We're going to develop moral skill. We're going to develop mental skill. Now, let's say that again. And the way it is said again is by taking verses 3, 4, and 5. And they re-emphasize moral skill. And then take verse 6, and it re-emphasizes the mental skill. And that's just a little thing to get accustomed to as far as, and the way it could be put is verse 2 is the general summary. 3 through 5 takes the same material identically and gives an expanded summary. That's typical Hebrew literature. That's the way they write, and it's a thing you really have to get used to, but it's a good teaching device to let's come off real short and real quick. What is the book about? It is written to develop moral skill. It is written to develop mental skill. Now let's assume that that didn't stick. And let's come back and take the first purpose, moral skill, and take verses 3, 4, and 5 and expand the headline. So think of it this way. It is headline comes first, and they're very brief. Then you have expanded headlines, and the relationship to the headlines and the expanded headlines is identical material, except the expanded headlines is more. Then you come down to the text. And so it'll be headlines, verse 2, expanded headlines, 3 through 6, and then text will be 8 through 19, or really 8 through most of the rest of the book. It's sort of a, think of it as a method of two quick punches, and then in the expanded part, twice that number of punches at the same spot. So the headlines pokes you on the ear, then the expanded headlines pokes you on the ear three times and simply expands the same theme, the same idea, and it's repeated. In our study of verses 8 through 19, we'll have that today, that we'll have a little summary in verses 8 and 9, and then he'll expand the thing out and make it broader. This is simply a Hebrew Old Testament way of getting a point across. So that establishes the purpose, and we stopped with verses 3 through 5, which is written to give the believer moral skill. Now, if you take those verses 3 through 5, especially verses 3 and 4, notice you have this teaching given from two standpoints. And read simply the first two words of verse 3 and the first two words of verse 4. And see if you can see how it outlines. Verse 3, to receive instruction. Verse 4, to give prudence. Notice in verse 4, prudence is being given or dished out or handed out. In verse 3, it's being taken in. Therefore, verse 3, to receive instruction. How would you characterize with a noun a person who receives instruction? That's a student. So, verse 3 is looking at things from the student standpoint. Verse 4 is talking about giving knowledge, and the one who gives it, of course, would be the teacher. So, verse 3 is looking at things from the student standpoint. Verse 4 is looking at things from the teacher's standpoint. We looked at the student last week, and now, today, let's pick up with the teacher. The teacher is in verse 4. And in verse 4, you'll have the teacher's purpose two ways. First of all, in verse 4a, you got the teacher's purpose relative to the naive people. You'll have the teacher's purpose relative to two groups in verse 4. To give prudence to the naive, and second, to give youth knowledge and discretion. And so basically he'll be saying, as the teacher, which is going to be wisdom, God's wisdom, I've got two things in mind. Number one, I would like to do something for the naive. And number two, I would like to do something for the inexperienced. I take it the difference between the naive and the youth is time. Here's a person who is 62 and very naive relative to God's wisdom and God's word. Whereas in the last part of verse 4, you've got the youth, and it's no fault of the youth that there is no wisdom yet, but the book of Proverbs is designed to give it. Okay, let's look now at the idea of the naive, and we'll want to develop what a naive person is and what the characteristics are. However, before we do it, and this is, I guess, I don't want to say parenthetical because that might imply it's unimportant, but we need to understand the three kinds of Proverbs. So let's just put three kinds of Proverbs. You see them throughout the entire book, and we need to understand them. First of all, keep in mind that in Proverbs and in Psalms and in much of the Old Testament, the idea of teaching is based around repetition of ideas. Repetition of ideas is called parallelism. And it's from the idea that first idea, parallel to it is a second, parallel to that is a third. And the Old Testament is full of that. Much of its emphasis is made by parallelism. For example, go to Exodus 1. This is something you need to get a grasp of for the Old Testament because it is so common and so important. parallelism in the Old Testament. Now, we have something in the English language. Whenever we're describing something and we want to make it vivid and memorable, what do we use? If we were going to emphasize the beauty of a tree, how would you do it? You do it with lots of descriptive phrases. You'd use lots of adjectives. It is a beautiful, green, tall tree. And then we'd give it's a beautiful, green, tall eucalyptus tree or something of that sort. And we'd use lots of adjectives. The minute you get into the Old Testament, they don't do that. They would use this parallel idea. And a good example of it is in Exodus 1:7. And the point that the author is trying to get across is that as the nation of Israel has gone down to Egypt, they have grown tremendously. Now, I just did it English style. They have grown, and then what did I add to the verb? An adverb, tremendously. Now, the Hebrew would not do that. As a matter of fact, adjectives and adverbs and that sort of thing is almost totally lacking. They would do it by parallelism. And the parallelism says, say the same idea using different words and do it over and over and over and over. And notice the way you've got it in verse 7. This is not English style, but this is the way the Old Testament works. Now, keep in mind, the idea is enormous growth. And how do they do it? By parallel statements. But the sons of Israel were fruitful. Next. Increased greatly. Next. Multiplied. Notice, same idea. Whether you say that they were fruitful or they multiplied, it's the same thing, except different words. Became exceedingly mighty. The land was filled with them. And therefore, you've got how many parallel things here? They're fruitful, increased greatly, multiplied, became increasingly mighty, the land was filled. Five lines. And how is each line different from the other in content? Not at all. The only difference is it's different in words. And in the Old Testament, you have a lot of that sort of thing developed. Now, for that, let's go back to the three kinds of proverbs. And they are parallelism by, number one, lines of contrast. Lines of contrast. That is saying this, saying something like this. State a truth in the first line and its antithesis in the second. For example, the room is dark. What's the antithesis of the room is dark? There is no light in the room. That would be lines of contrast. And you can pick those up by the key expression or the key word in lines of contrast in our translation is the word but. Line one will state a truth, and then we'll say, but, and it will give its antithesis or its opposite. Let's put with each one of these an example. An example of lines of contrast would be Proverbs 14, 1 through 6 is a series. Let's go to that, and you'll catch this type of thing. It's the way of getting a point across. Two parallel lines with the second one contrasting the first. Or the second one is the antithesis or the opposite of the first. And you can see it right straight down chapter 14 that says, the wise woman builds her house, but, antithesis, the foolish tears it down with her own hands. You see the two lines? The first one talks about building the house. Then the second line comes along as a line of contrast to the first. And why do they do that? Well, they do that because they want to say, here's what I'm saying, and here's the opposite of what I'm saying. One of the great strengths of the Reformation, and if you ever read any of the documents that come out of the Reformation with Luther and Calvin and so forth, is the way they said things. Whenever they told what they believed doctrinally, you know how they did it? They would say, here is what we believe. But they never stopped there. They would then follow that is, here is what we do not believe. And the point was, we'll tell you what we believe and then very carefully take time to tell you what we do not believe so you know what we're saying. And therefore, much of their writing, it was purposeful along that line of, now, we've stated our doctrine. That is not enough. Because there are things out there that are opposite to what we believe, so let's divorce all of those. And they very often will come along with, here's what we will believe. We do not believe what so-and-so says as to this, and he says this, and we reject that. And you have a lot of this sort of thing also in the book of Proverbs, is here's what I'm saying positively about the wise woman who builds her house, but to make that truth very clear, let's talk about the other kind of woman. So very typically it would be, here is the wise person, and in a contrasting proverb, here is a person that is not in that category or not wise. Verse 2, and you can see the series, he who walks in his uprightness fears the Lord, but he who is crooked in his ways despises him. Antithetical parallelism, if you prefer the more technical type thing. I put lines of contrast, antithetical parallelism. Verse 3, in the mouth of the foolish is a rod for his back, but the lips of the wise will preserve them. Verse 4, where no oxen are, the manger is clean, but much increase comes by the strength of the ox, and so forth. So you have lines of contrast, which is the first kind of proverb. The second is what we might call lines of completion. And the idea there is the second line fills out the first. Lines of completion. And the key word to lines of completion is the word and or so. And or so. Examples, we can stay with 14. And let's put two of them down, 14, 13, and 12, 28 are good examples of the and, so, or one line completing the next. All right, chapter 14, verse 13. And the idea is how the second line comes along and fills out the idea of the first. Verse 13, even in laughter the heart may be in pain, and take it further, complete it. The end of joy may be grief. Those are two lines, the second completing the first. Go back to 12, 28. Well, that's not correct. There is no 12, 20. Is there? Yeah, there is. No, there isn't. Yeah, there is. 12, 28. Okay. 12, 28, and the way of righteousness is life. Complete the idea. And further, in its pathway there is no death. And so notice you have what we call lines of completion. And we'll have those throughout Proverbs. The third kind we'll call lines of comparison. It's just part of the style of Proverbs. The key words to look for in lines that complete are like, so, or better than. Like, so, better than. Examples, write them out and then go to them. Proverbs 25, 26, 1 and 2, 27:10, and 12:9. And since we're close, let's go to 12:9. And notice these lines compare things together. Verse 9 of chapter 12 says, better is he who is lightly esteemed and has a servant than he who honors himself and lacks bread. And what's he doing? He's comparing two things together. And Proverbs does a lot of comparing. Chapter 25, verse 25. Again, notice this is a comparison. It says, like cold water to a weary soul, so is good news from a distant land. And so the comparison lies between a cold drink of water and good news coming from a distance. Proverb of comparison. 26, 1 and 2. Like snow in summer and like rain in harvest, so is honor not fitting for a fool. And so he sets up in the first part that It's very inappropriate for there to be snow in summer, and it's inappropriate for there to be rain in harvest. So honor is not appropriate for a fool. Verse 2, like a sparrow in its flitting, like a swallow in its flying, so a curse without cause does not alight. And then you have 27:10. We're not explaining these proverbs. I just want to see the contrast and comparison. 27:10. Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend, and do not go to your brother's house in a day of calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. And then you have, that's all examples we gave. So we got those three kinds. Now, going back to chapter 1, where we departed just a moment ago, Proverbs 1. Purpose of the book, to give moral skill, verses 3 through 5. Student standpoint, verse 3. Teacher standpoint, verse 4. And that subdivides two ways. And the first part in verse 4 is to give prudence to the naive. Now, what is the idea of, or how can we sketch out the naive? Several things about the naive. Number one, the naive is gullible. Little character sketch. The naive is gullible. Last Sunday we gave a 6-point sketch of the sluggard. And we'll be doing some character sketches throughout Proverbs. You know how many there are? About 180 different kinds of characters in the book of Proverbs that are sketched out as to what their characteristics are. The thing about them, however, is they're scattered. You know, you might have the sluggard in this chapter, then you go several more and you'll have them. They're not organized, and what I'm going to try to do is to give some of these in an organized sense. And now a little bit about what is this, or who is this gullible person, or naive person. Chapter 14, verse 15. He is gullible. It's the kind of person that hears things and he never verifies the truth of anything. You can tell him anything, he'll believe it. He does not verify. Chapter 14 and verse 15 talks about him. It says, the naive believes everything. The idea is you can tell him anything, he'll buy it. He does not verify his information. He does not check out facts. He just believes whatever comes in the ear gate. Then notice, to understand what he means by the naive believes everything, we get the contrast. The prudent man gives consideration to his steps. In other words, he's not about to make a step. He's not about to make a move without considering. You just don't tell him hey, there's a sale on down at so-and-so. And he goes tearing out and gets there and finds out that the sale was yesterday. That's being naive. He hears that there's a sale at a certain store, and what does he do? He picks up the phone and he calls the store so he won't go running down there without checking out his facts. Or he'll check the newspaper and find it. He does not believe everything that comes in the ear gate. This is gullibility. Now, we should compare that, however, with 1 Corinthians, and keep this passage open in Proverbs. 1 Corinthians 13. And this may not have crossed your mind, but in case in time it does, we want to distinguish between the characteristic of love and being gullible. Chapter 13, verse 7. He's giving us the characteristics of love. And one of the characteristics of love, notice coming down to verse 7, is it bears all things, it believes all things. Now, how do we distinguish the statement of verse 7 that gives the outstanding quality of love, that it believes all things, compared to the 14th chapter of Proverbs that says the naive believes everything? In Proverbs, it's a negative characteristic we don't want. In 1 Corinthians, it is a positive characteristic that we do want. And the difference between the two is 1 Corinthians 13 is simply saying this. Love looks at a situation and it believes the best. And the idea of believing all things is the idea that when you hear of a certain situation, you put the best construction on it. You don't put the worst on it. It's not talking about gullibility. So 1 Corinthians 13:7 is not gullibility. It's putting the best construction on things. Proverbs 14 is gullibility. He's gullible or does not confirm facts. He does not confirm facts. Believes everything. All right, second. The gullible or the naive person in the book of Proverbs would be the person who's always following for a rumor. You know, there's a rumor that this is going to happen. He gets all bent out of shape. He does not verify and find out that it is rumor. And I'm sure there's no one sitting here that has not been shaken at times during life because you believed a rumor and it turned out not to be true. And when you verified the facts, you found out that it was just exactly that. Harry Truman had a good statement on that. And again, it's Harry Truman. It's not a proverb. He said, the two greatest liars in the world are they said. And what he was emphasizing, that they said is probably not what they said, and therefore you never do. Have you ever had someone tell you what someone else had done, and you believed it, and you perhaps got angry or took some action toward that person, only to find out that what? That really wasn't the case. That was being naive. Naive acts on rumor. It does not confirm facts. All right, a second characteristic of the naive in Proverbs is he is totally blind to the danger of evil. He is totally blind to potential evil. He cannot look at a situation and say, that has potential danger in it. He just walks into it. And as a result, he's always getting punished. He's always suffering consequences of his actions. This is stated in Proverbs 22, verse 3, where the naive comes up again. 22:3. What kind of proverb is this? See verse 3? Notice we got a contrastive proverb. Two lines of contrast. And he's going to contrast a prudent man with a naive man. It says the prudent sees the evil and he hides himself. Notice the idea is he looks at a situation and he sees this is potentially dangerous. I'm not going to touch it. However, what does the naive do? He goes on and walks right into punishment and is punished for it. So he's blind to the potential of evil, chapter 22 and verse 3. Insensitive, he's open, he never turns his back on anything, and as a consequence, therefore we could, I think, add from this, he has no foresight. He just moves on the latest rumor. Doesn't see through anything. Fourth, and this is good news about the naive, he is curable. We can become a group that we might call the ex-naive. Now, how do we know he is curable? Proverbs 9 points out that this man can be cured. And much of the purpose of Proverbs is to get the man cured. Chapter 9, verse 14. I think I've got the wrong... Yeah, 9-4, I'm sorry, not 9-14, 9-4. The emphasis throughout these first nine chapters, remember, is wisdom is pictured in the public place crying out and saying, please listen to me, I have wisdom, I can give you information on life, please don't turn away from me or there's going to be disaster. And so notice in verse 4 he says, whoever is naive, let him turn in here. To him who lacks understanding, she says, come, eat of my food. Drink of the wine I have mixed. And this is wisdom saying, if you're naive, turn in at this inn. I've got dinner fixed for you. I've got wine for you to drink. And then you have the same thing down in verse 16. Whoever is naive, let him turn in here. So, there are two ways we can approach this now. You could say, well, I'm not among the naive. And therefore, that's good material, but it's not for me. Well, you are, therefore, if you do not see that point, definitely not a wise person. And we'll see why. Go back to Proverbs 1. If we're wise, on all these character sketches, we'll do something. We'll not say, no, that's not me. we will identify with it and we'll do something. And notice that is stated in verse 5. What will a wise person do? A wise person will hear what is being said in Proverbs about the naive, about the sluggard, and will do what? He will increase in learning. A man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. So if we're wise, we'll look at that and say, boy, there's something there to learn. When we went last Sunday through the characteristics of the sluggard, I don't know, did you see any characteristics of yourself? Or, as we said last week, throughout Proverbs in these character sketches, we're going to get tremendous insight into our husbands and wives. We're going to learn a lot about our next door neighbors, and we're going to learn a lot about other people in Beth Haven, and a lot about the people sitting behind us, and so forth. But these are all important to us. Just for a quick review, go to Proverbs 6. Remember, we're not going to write these out again, but in our last 5 minutes, let's just review the characteristics of a sluggard. We should have the 6 of them in our notes, hopefully in our minds. That's the purpose of review. Remember, the first characteristic is a sluggard is a person who never gets started. If you would say to him, when are you going to get it done? He never has an answer. Notice you have that in chapter 6, verses 9 and 10. It says, how long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? And notice the two key words, how long and when. And notice he doesn't reply by saying, how long? Oh, never. And when you ask him, when will you arise from your sleep? He never says, I plan to sleep forever. He replies by the key word of verse 10, just a little longer. Notice 10, a little sleep, little slumber, little folding of the hands to rest. In other words, as we said last week, he responds to, when are you going to get it done, by saying, oh, I only need a few more days. And the idea is, we'll use the barricade here. Here is the job to be done over here. And here is a sluggard sound asleep. And you say, when are you going to get the job done? And he doesn't say, I'm not going to do it. He just says, give me a few more inches of rest. And so he takes a few more inches. And you say, well, when are you going to get it done? And he takes a few more inches. And he never, never, never gets to the point. In other words, he surrenders all of the opportunities of life one inch at a time. And that's got to be poignant truth, doesn't it? How many opportunities in life do we surrender, not all at once, but one inch at a time? Just a little bit of sluggard characteristic does it. Good question. How many surrenders of opportunity have we made this week by just putting off? I don't know why. Every time I think through this, my garage comes to mind. I can rationalize that, though. That's not a spiritual priority, I guess. I'm going to get it done real soon, though, however. I just need a little more time. Okay, obviously, if the sluggard, remember, does not start anything, it is obvious he never finishes anything. And that's where you get some humor in Proverbs over at chapter 12. Proverbs, by the way, has got a lot of humor in it. It's got some funny things in it, humorous things. Truth, but in humorous garb. 27, a slothful man, this is the sluggard, does not roast his prey. And so this is the guy that goes out and hunts, and he brings home his deer, but he never did finish butchering the deer, and it therefore spoils, and it never gets eaten. The other one, and again, I think it's the one that's humorous, is, I believe it's chapter 19, verse 24. Yeah, it's got to be humorous. Never starts anything. He never finishes anything. And verse 24 says, the sluggard buries his hand in the dish and will not even bring it back to his mouth. So you got a guy sitting there with a plate of food, and he's got the meat on the fork, but he's a sluggard. And that's all the farther the meat ever gets, is to the fork. It never gets to his mouth because he has the characteristic of he never begins anything, and consequently he never finishes anything and takes it through to its end. As a result, you recall, sluggard is a person also who refuses to face reality. He rationalizes everything. He says, I'm not going to go out because it's autumn time, and in autumn time that was representative of the cold. And consequently, he can't get his job done because it's cold outside. And you get into that whole pattern, don't you? It's so easy to think of an excuse for everything. Old standard is I got a headache, you know, or I have a cold or something of that sort. And there's a job to be done, but we have all of the characteristics of the sluggard, which is never able to finish things because he rationalizes all of his laziness and so forth. Consequently, remember, his life is restless, it's unsatisfied, and he's characterized by total disorder. That was spelled out in Proverbs 24, where you had the writer of Proverbs going along and he sees this field. And obviously the guy had planted some crops, but he never did hoe it, he never did finish anything, and consequently it's all grown up with thistles. And the writer of Proverbs says, I see a lot of people like that. You can see evidence that they planted a few rows out there. But boy, you can't see the rows anymore. I mean, it's obvious that they're there. There's a little pattern. But look at the weeds that have grown up. And therefore he looks and says there are many, many people in that category of, yeah, you started something and there is evidence that you did get going a little bit. You did get the seeds in the ground. The plants did come up a little bit. But look at the thing. It's thistles and weeds has grown over it. And why? Because you quit right in the middle of the job. So you don't start anything, you don't finish anything, you quit in the middle of the job. The picture of the proverb. Now, of the sluggard. So we'll be getting character sketches like that. Incidentally, the sluggard is told he can change. Classic passage is, sluggard, go to the ant. The ant doesn't have a supervisor, and the ant prepares in summer for winter. And therefore you have all of these people are curable and are given the cure throughout the book of Proverbs. All right, we'll want to pick up next hour. Let me give you where we're going. I think we'll get there. In 8 through 19, you have the only real passage that talks about companionship. And it deals with the subject that throughout life there are going to be certain people that we are going to meet that are going to entice you against the will of God. And he's going to tell how do we respond to those influences coming from people that are not leading us into the will of God. And we'll have one of the only addresses down in verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. And we'll have a key passage in 8 through 19 talking about how do we handle solicitation to do the wrong thing, not coming from our sin nature, but coming from people. And that will be the passage that we'll deal with. We'll try to get that next hour. And I also want to try to give you an outline of what we'll be doing next week, which is in 20 through 33, which it looks like we'll probably not get done, but that's what I'd like to do anyway. Father, we're thankful for your word. We pray that we'll study it carefully in order to obey it. May we gain the wisdom for living coming from the book of Proverbs. We're thankful for its practicality. We're thankful for the fact that you, in very pointed language, point out the characteristics that all of us bear. We cannot look at the sluggard without saying, how many things do we need to do that we haven't started yet? How many rows have we planted? And now, as we look at it, it's all grown over with weeds and thistles. And how many jobs have we never finished that need to be done? And therefore, may we learn from your word the intelligence and the wisdom for living so that we can move out of the class of being the sluggard, so that we can move out of the class of the naive and be wise and prudent believers. For we ask this in Christ's name.